I'm just seeing people do really clever things through technology that 5 years ago would have been unimaginable. People are like, there's no way that you can sell plumbing services through FaceTime. And it's like, well, this guy just sold $1 million of it last year. So I don't know, like you tell me. That's what I mean by self-serve sales process. I'm not saying that this is a massive shift we need to make overnight. I just think that people that can get really curious about building buyer's journeys like this are going to be a little bit ahead of the curve in the same way that people that understood how to use Zoom before COVID happened, like had an edge too.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian, and with me today is Benji Carlson. What's up, Benji?
Brian, it's great to see you, man.
Good to see you.
I love jamming out with you. You've been on my podcast a couple of times. It's time I returned the favor. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Tell everybody who you are. Tell them about your podcast.
It all started in 1992. I'm just kidding. The quick version. My name's Benji. I am the head of content for Breakthrough Academy. We systemize contracting businesses for growth. So you could think of us like a boutique advising firm, coaching firm specifically for construction and trades. So I lead the content side of our marketing team there, work with some video people, a really talented graphic designer, a marketing producer. And we make stuff that we put out onto the internet that hopefully our audience finds compelling enough to learn more about our services and buy from us. One of those things that we put out is the Contractor Evolution podcast, which has grown to be beloved by many. And I'm very blessed and humbled and honored to get to produce that. And we're coming up on our 200th episode in a few weeks. And if you guys are interested, you can find that on every platform every Wednesday we release. So that's a bit about me.
What number am I? Or was I? What was the last one?
You're putting me on the spot here. I don't know. You were like 180 or something.
So prepared though. When we did the podcast episode, I was so impressed with how prepared you were. And you had like, okay, if you want to learn about this, go to podcast number this and podcast number that. I got to get better at that.
Big prep guy, Brian. And
I may be, we may be hiring, Brian, an assistant.
Good.
Here soon. Apparently, I'm notoriously difficult to work with. And so we'll see. We'll see how this person does in helping me be organized and get on a podcast and be able to say, oh, yeah, if you want to learn about this and this, go to podcast number such and such. That'll be a good one for you.
Why do they say you're notoriously difficult to work with? I don't buy that for a second.
I don't know. But they say all kinds of shit about me here.
Lies.
Yeah. It's like every meeting is like beat Brian up meeting. But I don't know. Whatever. I can't do it without them. And maybe they can't do it without me.
I think that's true.
So you're in the, I see back the windows behind you. You're in the Great White North, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Beautiful.
I live in a really beautiful little city called Kelowna here in British Columbia, Canada, which is, West Coast.
Oh, you're way on the West Coast then.
West Coast of BC, although I'm not technically on the coast, although there is a massive lake behind me. So there's always a body of water nearby when you live here. Yeah, I'm Canadian, proud of it. Although I've been told I'm the most American Canadian many people have ever met, which I generally believe is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, from the Great White North, spent a lot of time in the States. A lot of our clients are in the States. We just happen to be based here.
Yeah, we have a few clients in common, which is great. So what we're going to talk about, so part of the reason I asked Benji to come on is just he's got so much insight into literally like hundreds of contractors and what they're doing and what works and what doesn't work. And the services they offer are great at Breakthrough Economy. And so I thought it would be interesting to bring Benji on, and we're here at the end of the year recording this. This probably won't be released until the beginning of the year, but I think it'll be still very, very, very relevant. And I was going to ask you about emerging trends and patterns for success, things that you see coming in the next year, 2-3 years. I'm not sure how much you guys are impacted by our elections up there.
We are impacted in the sense that we pay very close attention to it. Like everyone here is very up to speed. In terms of like the actual impact on our daily life, that would be, you know, to a much lesser extent than it is for you guys. But people are, Canadians pay attention to Americans much more than Americans pay attention to Canadians. So we're pretty in the loop.
Are you? Okay, cool. So let's talk about what are some of the things that you see coming down? What are the things that people are going to need? And, you know, home improvement entrepreneurs, what are they going to need to be successful in 2025 and beyond?
I'll give you three. These are like three kind of chunky big things, and we can dive into each. You tell me which one, what you want to go in order. So one would be, I think modern brand building is going to be really, really critical. And that's not just because I'm a brand guy. That is what sort of like the research is showing. That's what a lot of the experts are saying. And that's what I'm seeing in my lived experience. So brand building, number one, self-serve sales processes. I think number two would be a huge thing that I'm really, really into right now and seeing done very effectively to exceptional results, both for the customer and the contractor. And then a third thing that I'm really keying in on right now is performance pay. Yeah, now there's nothing wrong with paying people hourly, but you can do this in a much more clever and thoughtful way and get more output from your people, better jobs for your customers, and just create a win-win-win-win-win scenario for everyone by being a little bit more, let's say, progressive, a little forward thinking with the way that you compensate your people. So okay, I don't know where you want to start, but there's a lot.
Well, I actually want to start with the middle one because I'm a little intrigued by this idea of self-serve sales. I don't even know what that means. So tell me what that means and what it looks like.
I believe that these massive platforms like Amazon, like any good e-commerce site, have really changed the way that consumers make purchases, and they've changed the way that the expectations that buyers and by extension homeowners have of service provider. I mean, like the invention of the online shopping cart, however many years ago, was pretty revolutionary. And then Jeff Bezos came up with like the one click purchase. Like that was like a really innovative idea at the time. And I'm not saying that you can have a house built with a one-click purchase, but I think that we, like any remodeler, contractor, home service provider can kind of look at what's happening at the cutting edge of the economy or the business sphere and take lessons from that. And so I've heard people call it this before. It's like the Amazonification of the buyer's journey, meaning people really gravitate towards ease of use when it comes to purchasing. And the data is very, very clear. The more friction you can remove from a buying process, the more sales you're going to get. So what does this look like for contractors? It's going to look different depending on your trade and your industry, but where I see things going is less time. If you can create through automations on your website, really clever form captures, really interesting technology like Hover or Eagle View. There's another one called Groundwork where you actually like, it's an app that kind of gets your customer to like film their own house and take their own measurements and like build their own scope of work without having you drive there. There's all this incredible technology that is making available an opportunity for us to not be so, I would say, like mid-90s in terms of our customer service. You hear a lot of contractors, and by the way, I don't think that this is like the end of in-home selling, but I will say you hear a lot of contractors talk a lot about, you know, I can't sell unless I can get in front of someone. I really need to like be at the home, and I need to be at the home for 2 hours, and I need to be at the home for 2 hours with both decision makers. And These are all lessons that any good salesperson will have been taught in their training. And if you're good at sales, you do a good job enforcing that and persuading that and getting people to kind of acquiesce to your wants and needs as a salesperson. But what a lot of like smart marketers and salespeople, I think, are seeing is that is beginning to shift, and buyers want to control more of the buyer's journey themselves. And I would go so far as to say, I think in 20 years, you know, when millennials like own most of the homes and run most of the businesses and are kind of like the rich people, the way that baby boomers are right now, do you think that that generation is going to like want you to come to the house for 2 hours to look at a project? I don't think they will. I people disagree with me, but I think that things are moving in that direction. So a self-serve sales process is basically a buyer's journey, a sales funnel, or whatever you want to call it, that allows the customer to get as much information as possible, and in some cases, even a price on a project without you visiting them. They click on a button, they take some measurements, they send you some pictures. Maybe you have a VA in the Philippines who does some measurements and puts together a digital proposal using a tool like SumoQuote, and then they send it back to them. We have a roofer in Eastern Canada in a like not a strong market who did $6.6 million in roofing sales through one person in a VA because they set all of this up through really clever email automations and automated proposals that are done. And it's like, it's quite brilliant. Like they don't drive around from house to house doing quotes all day. It's really, really cool.
It's interesting because I'm letting you talk because I'm trying to process this because, you know, to me and all of my clients, I am a firm believer that home improvements need to be sold face to face, belly to belly at the kitchen table, because in order to profit today, we need to get premium pricing. And in order to get premium pricing, we need a value-added sales system. Mm-hmm. It can't be about the price. And the one thing that concerns me about that is that it all of a sudden now becomes about price. And look, if this dude has very little marketing costs, very little overhead, maybe he could do a, you know, 40% gross margin, be cheap, basically, you know, have 10 points of marketing spend, maybe 5-10 points of overhead, you know, very, very light, and squeeze 20 points out of, you know, 6 million in sales. I don't know. I haven't seen his financials. It's very interesting, though.
What I would say is I'm not advocating that everyone needs to make this like massive
We're just talking about what you're seeing.
I'm looking at the way that buyers buy things in general. And I'm just looking at like the ripples on the front edge of a wave being like, I could see a scenario where this is where 50% of the sales happen in 10 years, or maybe it's 70% of the sales in 20 years. There will always be people who want to do the handshake and be sold at the kitchen table and build rapport and develop trust. And so we always offer that. I'm just seeing people do really clever things through technology that 5 years ago would have been unimaginable. People are like, there's no way that you can sell plumbing services through FaceTime. And it's like, well, this guy just sold $1 million of it last year. So I don't know, like you tell me. So anyway, that's what I mean by self-serve sales process. I'm not saying that this is a massive shift we need to make overnight. I just think that people that can get really curious about building buyer's journeys like this are going to be a little bit ahead of the curve, in the same way that people that understood how to use Zoom before COVID happened, like had an edge too.
Get this. My buddy, Scott Berman, who owns Florida Window and Door, largest window replacement company in Florida, he developed this incredible software that it works. I believe it works all of the time, but get this, after hours, call center's gone. Okay. He's running Google ads when everybody else, all of his competition has stopped running ads. So he's running from 8 to 8. This software, what it does is it captures the customer's information, ties in with the CRM, and then actually schedules the appointment. And these appointments don't have to be confirmed because they're strong. It's all being done through text messaging. There's an AI component built into it, but it's all dumping like right into the CRM, which this goes along with what you are saying. Because me personally, at this point, I was a late adopter to texting. I thought it was annoying, you know, so I didn't text people because I didn't want the distraction. I didn't want people texting me. Well, now it's like you can't get away from it. It's nonstop. I mean, I have texts going on with probably 25 people. And I prefer to set appointments with people via texting. I don't want to talk with somebody. It's like, oh, I'm going to call a company. Then I'm going to have to deal with this. Then I'm going to have to deal with that. No, just send me, you know, the information I need to say, okay, yeah, send me somebody, or I need this to be done. And then give me the ability to go and schedule it myself and then confirm all of it with me via texting and let me know, okay, you're set for this and this time. Then it gets onto my calendar. And then you're going to text me to let me know, hey, remind me, hey, this is our appointment. And then, hey, our guy is on his way. There's a lot of really cool stuff like that happening right now. He's on the cutting edge of it. I mean, this system that he built is pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The open rates on texting are so much higher and the interactivity is so much higher, which is why when you go, again, you go to any good e-com site, if you think of something that you buy online, I don't know if you order clothes online or something, but.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, give me a brand that you like.
Oh, I just bought a pair of shoes from Coil.
Okay, so these guys, they on their website, one of the first things that they would do, there'd be a pop-up within about 15 seconds that's trying to capture your phone number. They don't ask for emails anymore. Right. They say for 15% off your first order, give us your phone number. Why do they do that? Because they know that open rates on text are somewhere, it's like 90%, and the click-through rates are like way higher than email. I'm not saying email is dead. I'm just saying the most sophisticated marketers in the world are really, really tapping into this text thing. And I think contractors can too. So like, you're going to have to make this make sense for your business. And there are certain types of, if you're doing interior remodels, I don't think the technology is there yet to see inside the walls and understand the shape of the space. What part of your sales process can you make self-serve? What friction can you remove? I had to get my snow tires put on the other day because it snows here. And I was so frustrated because I had to call three places and two of them weren't open. And the third one was open. And she asked me like 40 questions. I'm like, this could just be a form that you send to my phone.
That's right.
And I wouldn't need to talk to Sheila for 20 minutes before going for a work. I'm like so pissed off right now. Make this easy for me. I'm willing to spend money. Just make it easy for me. So I think that's the overarching message.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. You hit the gamut too, didn't you? People didn't pick up the phone. So there's a lot of contractors out there that are advertising. But then when somebody calls them or goes to their website, it's a dumpster fire. It's like, you know, you just wasted a potential lead. And then you've got the people like that are just way over the top with, you know, pre-qualifying you. So did you end up going? Did you end up making an appointment with them or?
I did, but I did it begrudgingly. And I was sitting there being like,
yeah, it's a bad experience.
By the end of the phone call with Brian, I was like, do you have everything you need? She's like, do you want us to keep the tires or give the tires to charity? I'm like, can you just ask me when I get there? Like, this is getting, do you need my social insurance number? Do you want to know where I keep my house keys? Like, how much info do you need here, guys?
Yeah.
It was so annoying. But,
You know what this also goes to, Benji? Is this also goes to customer experience. I don't think a lot of businesses pay attention to their customer's journey. They think that, oh, okay, I have to do this. I got to set this up. I got to have somebody answer the phone. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to. Well, instead, why don't you take a step back and say, okay, what does my process currently look like? And then look at every interaction they have with that customer and say, is this a wow experience? Is this a great experience with the customer? And if it's not, how do we make it a great experience for the customer? Asking somebody 40 questions who just wants damn snow tires put on their car is ridiculous. Now, they got lucky.
They did.
I don't believe in luck, but they got lucky. because their competition are a bunch of morons. You know, but you had no choice. So that's not a great customer experience either, not having a choice. Or only having the choice of the person that actually picks up the phone is not a great choice.
I think a lot of us sometimes get caught up in notions and ideas of the way things ought to be. And even I get this. I mean, I'm only 32, but sometimes I feel like I sound like an old man where I'm like, oh, kids these days, and look at what's happening, and AI this and technology that and algorithms this. And it's sort of, there's these, and there's sort of like the business equivalent of that, where we're sort of like, I will hear contractors be like, ah, God, like nobody wants to talk on the phone anymore. And it's like, no, they don't. And like, you have no control over that. And I really think you're wasting your time. Like at the end of the day, the customer holds like the gavel, they're the final judge and jury on everything.
Yeah, they got to check.
And whether or not that's morally good or bad, I'm going to leave that to the philosophers. I'm just going to say that's how a capitalistic system works. So if you think, you know, customers these days don't want me to call them and talk to them, it's like, no, they don't. So what do they want to do? Oh, they want to text. Okay, let's find the solution or the framework or the step-by-step process. There's probably a book you can read about it on how to implement something like that. And I, one of the things that I've learned in the last few years is just like the need to let go much quicker of my own ideas of the way things ought to be, and instead just deal with what is, what are customers actually asking for? How do they want to interact? How do they want to be spoken to? And I have to adapt to that, not try to force them to adapt to me.
Exactly. Well, and that's exactly my point, is how do you make a great customer experience? You put yourself in your customer's shoes. I think that if more companies, you know, we're in an experience economy, and I, for years, my company was all about customer experience. And my company, G4 Marketing, was it. And we taught companies how to provide a great customer experience. And I used to talk about the experience economy. The experience economy started about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's in full swing now. It's really all about that customer experience. And as you go looking at businesses and you look at like Google reviews and out things from the outside that help you determine whether or not this is a good company or not, a lot of that is going to be centered around the customer's experience with it. You know, Google reviews are golden, you know, and everybody wants them, and everyone wants the most and the best ratings and all of that. Well, it's really tied into what you're talking about here.
I loved everything that you did with G4. And I remember talking to you about it a couple of years ago about the whole relationship marketing cycle. I mean, I learned a lot from you. I think that you were on sort of like the front edge of that for the home service space.
Took me 7 years to crack it.
Yeah, I bet. It's tricky. Like, I think sometimes I've said this before where I'm like, oh, you know, roofing is a commodity or painting is a commodity. And from a certain lens, it is. Like, from a certain lens, you could make that case. But there's a whole other argument, which is anytime people are doing anything connected to their home or their space, it's a deeply emotional experience. And there's that word again. And so, like, you need to, I think, find ways. And, you know, one of like this ties into what you do now, Brian, like all the stuff that you work on with profitability mindset and figuring out a pricing strategy that works for you. None of that works unless you're able to connect with people, create value with people, develop deep trust with people. You want to charge a lot. That's the goal. And the best way to do that.
Well, because you want to make a profit. I think we talked about it last time on your podcast, is there's way too many, and you see it too, and that's why people come to you, is they want help in making money out of this, is like, you know, there's too many contractors out there that are making a living. And they may be doing millions and millions and millions of dollars, but they're just making a living. They're not really setting their business up to be super profitable, to be able to take care of their family, to take care of their team, to take care of their team's families. They're just out there making a living. And they think that roofing is a commodity, or I shouldn't say they think that. It is a commodity, but you don't have to be in the commodity business. I have a bunch of clients. I mean, I don't know how many clients we have in the roofing business. And, you know, I just think about a few of them that created incredible organizations out of roofing. And I mean, one, I don't know if I should mention the name or not, but you could look it up. Victor's Roofing out of Detroit. I mean, this guy was so focused on building an extraordinary company. It started off as Victor's Roofing, and now it's Victor's Home. But he built this thing to tens of millions of dollars, super profitable, super profitable. But he was premium priced, created an amazing experience for his customers. It grew so much. He added offices, added products. Somebody came along, wrote him a life-changing generational check, a generational wealth check for it. And it just goes to show that, hey, yes, you could look at your business as a quote unquote commodity, or you can look at it as something that's going to be different and unique, that's going to serve the customer. That's really all about the customer. Let's make our business customer focused. Yes, they're going to pay more. And you know what? They're going to be fine with it because they know they're getting peace of mind. They're going to get confidence, and they know that they're going to get good quality products and good workmanship and somebody that's going to be there to back it up.
They're going to love paying for it.
They're going to love paying for it. Yeah. So let's go to, I want to hit the other two things. And then I've got a fourth one that I want to ask you about, because you're young and because you're as sharp as you are and with all of the stuff you're doing marketing wise and content wise, but I'm going to save that one for the end. Let's talk a little bit about performance pay, because this is critical. This is critically important, because the idea behind performance pay is, let's keep our salaries low, which helps with overhead, monthly overhead costs. Let's keep our salaries low, but let's put in incentives for hitting the numbers that we want to hit, for the performance that we want. And when we hit these numbers, you're going to get huge bonuses. So you're going to share in the company's success. But it's also, I think, a much better way financially to run the business. That's my take on it. So tell me about, you know, what you're seeing with performance pay.
My thoughts on performance pay is that you're like, if you were to think about some of your core missions as an entrepreneur in the home service space, and I got to give credit to a few, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. Like the first person who really got me like keyed into this was I don't know if you've met him, probably you have, is Tommy Mello.
Oh yeah,
I know Tom. Who I love and adore. Yeah. And hi Tommy, if you're listening. He's been on this one like early and has been talking about it for a long time. So he doesn't phrase it exactly this way, but my thoughts on this is, your goal as an entrepreneur in this space is to find a way, a method, a modality, a framework, a system by which you can pay your staff more than anyone else. Like from a very first principles thinking mindset, like what is like, how do you win? Okay, well, you win by charging the most. How do you charge the most? By doing the best. How do you do the best? By having the best people on your team. How do you have the best people on your team? You find a way to reliably, predictably, and still profitably pay them the most.
If you're busting your ass every day, but still not seeing the profits you deserve, listen up. Most of us got into this business from a sales or production background. We know how to sell. We know how to get the job done. But no one ever taught us how to build a truly profitable business, one that generates serious money month after month, no matter the competition or market conditions. But here's the game changer. There is a proven formula for making boatloads of money in this business. And for the first time, those who've cracked the code are finally sharing their secrets. Introducing the Profit Masters, the done-for-you service that hands you a proven profit framework, does industry-specific bookkeeping and real job costing for you, plus monthly profit coaching to help you finally achieve the life-changing net profit you deserve. Now, don't take my word for it. Listen to what other owners are saying.
You're getting a whole team for a fraction of the cost. Do it now. Don't hesitate.
It took a lot off my plate. I mean, it like changed our life.
If I could have found out about this earlier in life, I would have jumped in way sooner. Best investment I ever made.
The truth is, you were never taught how to build a profitable home improvement business, let alone how to use it to create real wealth. But now, you can get the proven blueprint that so many successful home improvement business owners are using to transform their profits. Go to theprofitmasters.com right now to schedule your no-obligation discovery call. Again, that's theprofitmasters.com. Don't wait. You have nothing to lose and a whole lot of money and freedom to gain.
So, what's wrong with paying hourly? Nothing, technically. Most of the world does it that way still and probably will for a long time yet. But I have seen enough instances where business owners are just getting very clever. And instead of just saying, okay, well, this project's 100 hours, your hourly rate is $25 an hour, try to do it 100 hours or less. There's no incentive structure. There's no dopamine hit. There's no dangling carrot for that worker. Try your best is ain't doing it. There needs to be a structured approach. So I think that people that are exploring how to do piece rate, which is essentially like find a way to pay your employees in a similar way that you pay your subs so that they make more by working faster. Now, a lot of people go, how do you ensure quality? Well, there's bonuses for quality. There's bonuses for Google reviews. There's a way to manufacture this. And you know, these industries that we talk to are sort of too sprawling and different in different markets for me to like give a prescriptive approach on how you do this for your specific business wherever you live. But what I can say is that entrepreneurs who are getting on the front edge of this and thinking about how do I, and by the way, I should make this distinction. There's two levels of it. So there's like the crew level, which is like, how do I estimate and project plan and project manage and execute work in a way that ties tempo, intensity, and quality and customer satisfaction with payment?
Yeah.
How do I do that for the crews? And then on another level, it's like, how do I do this for my management staff? When your business grows and scales, one of the things that I'm sure some of your listeners are experiencing right now and probably thought about this morning before they listened to this podcast is this idea of a bloated overhead. In other words, I have a whole bunch of non-revenue producing roles who I need to pay a salary, who, yes, I have like a job description. And yes, we talk at the beginning of the year about what they should go do. But at the end of the day, they get paid 70 grand a year or 120 grand a year, whether we build a little or we build a lot. If you look at how nature works, like literally like the fundamental laws of physics, like that's not how animals function. That's not how primates function. Like to the victor goes the spoils, eat what you kill. Like these old adages that we sort of say and know to be true. We certainly know it to be true in sales. And that sales has operated like that forever because the math is very easy. But when it comes to production, the math is like slightly harder, not impossible, just like needs a little bit more thought. And I see people who are doing that thinking both for their crew level, find a way to incentivize your worker bees to work faster and keep your customers really happy. And then find a way to incentivize your managers, whether they be production managers or marketing managers or whatever, to also think that way. These businesses grow at an alarming rate because everyone is paddling in the same direction. I think Tommy's new book is called Elevate, and the subtitle is Build a Business Where Everyone Wins. And I just like that framing. Yeah. So I'm very into performance pay right now. I believe in its future in this space. And I think that now is the time, if you want to get ahead of this, now would be the time to read some books and get educated and start to think about how to drill this down into your company.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I see the best companies in the industry are implementing performance pay. If they didn't have it already, they're starting to implement it. But it's also one of those things that a small company can use to make them like a big company, because a lot of stuff doesn't translate. You know, big companies can do stuff, $20 million company, $30 million company can do a lot of things a $2 million company cannot. And when a $2 million company tries to act like a $20 million company, it sometimes will derail them and derail them hard. But this is one of those things that you could take and learn from what these big companies are doing. And I like what you said about growing at an alarming rate, because this does help the company grow fast and profitably. It is one of those things that a small company can implement into their business, and it'll help them grow more because it keeps their overheads low. And if they have a bad month, it doesn't destroy them. Everybody participates. But when they have good months and now your team is on board and they're getting big, big bonus checks, now it's like, okay, now we're off to the races. And now what happens is now you get to attract and hire people that are driven by winning.
The other thing too, I think people are sleeping on is it's an automatic culture filter, in the sense that the only people who want to, let's say I own a painting business and my ads on LinkedIn and my like landing pages where I ask people to apply and my website and my careers page and my social media and all these channels where I'm trying to recruit people, I talk about this performance-based system where the fastest and best painters make 30% more than the average painters. Yeah. The only people applying are the fastest and best painters. That's the right. Average yep. painters go, screw that. I don't want, like, I just want hourly. So there's an auto filter thing that it does that I think is really cool. The one really big caveat that I think, and this happens with a lot of things that people talk about on podcasts and make seem really simple, is there is infrastructural prerequisites that you have to have really good tracking, number one. Oh, there needs to be a good CRM and a good project management tool, a good time tracking app where you can see when people clock in and out, how long they're spending on each individual stage of the project. There needs to be a single source of truth and not kind of a dilapidated, half filled out one that's only partly used and nobody really knows how to pull reports from it. That needs to be well established systematically and culturally in your business first, that tracking piece. And the other thing is there needs to be real like thoughtfulness as a leader around what it is you're trying to incentivize. A lot of the times people will give bonuses just frankly for the wrong things. And so you need to like, I don't know if you've ever seen this.
Like somebody's a Christmas bonus.
Yeah. Or like,
here's a bonus.
Or like a project bonus on something random that's not really connected to the business goals, because you're like, oh, I should give people bonuses. And, oh, but I also heard I shouldn't give a Christmas bonus. So then maybe I'll think of this. Like, I'm like, yes, go do this. But I'm also saying there's no rush, and make sure you have some of the baseline stuff in place first, because you don't want to end up in employment court where you're arguing over, you know, what you owe someone 6 months from now.
Well, this goes to, well, why can a small company use this? How can a small company emulate this, to use this and put their business on steroids? Is because you're right. The underlying here thing is, What are our KPIs? Mm-hmm. What are our targets? And most companies, you know this, that's why they come to you, is they fly by the seat of their pants, you know, and it's like, okay, we did 3 million this year. How much do you want to do next year? 4 million. Okay, well, what's your plan? How are you going to get there? What does it look like? Well, what we teach is, let's take that, and we follow the EOS model. But it's like, okay, you want to do 4 million next year. How does that break down? What does Q1 look like? What are the targets that we need to hit? So we have 13 weeks to achieve our goal. What does it look like? So here are the KPIs for the performance KPIs. Here's P&L KPIs. And the more of those that you have in place, now you're incentivizing people to hit or exceed the targets. So not only do you have a plan, but now you've got a team of people that are aligned with the plan, that are working to execute on that plan and make sure that plan happens, because when that plan happens, they get to win and they get to participate. And I think that that's the real power in this idea of performance pay.
It's not going to be for everyone. It's not going to be for every worker on your team, and that's totally fine. But you
slowly want to replace. You want to get rid of the people that it's not for, because a
lot
of
my attitude.
Yeah, a lot of times they aren't winners. I mean, let's be frank. Let's be honest. They're not winners. If somebody is afraid of being held to a certain KPI or certain accountabilities, I don't want that person in my organization.
Yeah.
You probably don't either.
No, you don't. And Tommy talks a lot about that, like rolling it out slow, like doing it with your first high performing crew,
right.
Selling it to them well, like testing, learning, iterating. Does this work? You would, for heaven's sake, not want to roll this out to your entire company on the same day.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, everybody, yeah. Just cut your salaries in half.
It's a slow thing.
Yeah. Let's move on to... I left this one for last.
Sure.
Because I'm always interested in this idea of brand building. So I come from the Dan Kennedy world, which is all about direct response marketing. It's all about, you know, how do we make a lead cost effectively and profitably and efficiently today? The other day, actually, I was talking with somebody and we were talking about their marketing budget, and they said, we're spending money on brand building. And I'm like, oh my God, because we were talking about profitability. They weren't as profitable as they wanted to be. And I'm like, oh shit, how much are you spending on this brand building stuff and why are you doing it? And so for me, it's almost like a bad word, but I want to hear your take on it because I think you're going to help shift my thinking on it a little bit.
Okay. I know exactly where you're coming from. So a lot of people will have like ideas, like notions around like what I mean when I say brand building, which is like some really like expensive brand consultant with like fancy glasses and like a really cool checkered suit is going to come over and you're going to talk about like your values and your mission. And you're going to do this, like this really long, extensive, like discovery process about you and your brand identity. And then they're going to do this market analysis where they look at your competitors. And it's going to cost you $100,000 or $250,000 to get this new brand strategy. And ultimately what it is sort of, a lot of it can be, I have worked with an incredible brand strategist, like Noel Fox, the guy that has built, you know, the whole Odoo franchise brand systems. Love, like he does an exceptional job. I'm talking about like the knockoff versions of him. And there are many. You can overspend a whole bunch of dollars on what I would consider fluff. And so my view on this, like I believe in brand. Like I do fundamentally believe in the concept of brand. But when it comes to this specific business environment, these more kind of blue collar businesses that are locally owned and operated, most of them are between $1 and $10 million a year. A few of them grow to 10 and, you know, absolute monsters to my eyes, it'd be like $30 million a year. And then you have like these like total one-offs like Tommy or others who are, you know, running nine-figure businesses and working with private equity groups and sort of operating at a scale that is just not really who I'm talking to. So who I'm talking to is like this, your average $1 to $10 million a year business. What does that person need in terms of brand building? They need a great name, a great logo, a great website. They need great social media. They need a good, like good print materials, good sales collateral. My point is all of that stuff can be purchased quite inexpensively. So I get questions about what, and the question is always like, what are the quick and dirty? What's the inexpensive? What's the cheap and cheerful brand upgrades that I should do for my business? And the reason the people who ask me these questions always qualify it with those terms is because they don't want me to say, go work with a $500,000 a year brand consultant. Like, no, I don't want that. I want a graphic designer who understands how to do X, Y, Z and get me the right colors and the right fonts. And So my point is, you can do this.
No, go ahead.
I'm on kind of.
We're not talking about, like, when you talk about brand, immediately what I start to think about is billboards. I start to think about ads that don't have an offer, that just have a look and feel. That don't have an offer, that don't have a call to action today. And so I think that that's where I think you and I are agree on this idea. But I think what, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're saying is you got to look professional. If you're going to charge premium prices, boy, you better look like a premium price provider. Your trucks better look clean. They better be wrapped really nice. Your people need to have uniforms, clean, and on and on and on. All the materials that you're using. You know, to me, brand has always been about what happens from the moment somebody sees an ad, responds to your ad, and gets now picks up the phone and calls you or fills out a form. That's where brand building starts, because that's now where, again, what we were talking about earlier with customer experience, that's where now it's all about the customer experience. And if you're, you know, if you have an opportunity at that moment to really impress this customer and show them why your quote unquote brand or your company is different from everybody else. And where I disagree vehemently with people is this idea that, well, I can put a bunch of stuff out there and people are just going to know my name and they're going to call me. Well, look, we ain't Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
We ain't Tiffany. We don't have 100 years and hundreds of millions of dollars to spend building a brand. We need leads right today. Right. Every day starts at zero. So I need leads today. Now, if I want to, I think you should build brand, but I think you do it through, it's a byproduct of really marketing that's really well done, direct response marketing that's done really well, that gets people to actually give you an opportunity to experience your brand.
It's so well said, Brian. I'm glad you made that distinction. Like when I say brand, what I'm talking about is looking, sounding, feeling professional through your website, through your socials, through the swag that your guys wear, through your print materials, all the stuff that I mentioned. I think that that matters a lot. And I know, because I work with agencies all the time, you can do this for like $5,000 and you could have something dope for 10. Like for a $2 million a year business, like that is, I'm not going to say it's a rounding error, but like you can afford that. So you should
can't afford not to.
That's what I'm saying.
You're going up against a sophisticated 20, 30, $100 million private equity backed company. How are you going to compete? Well, you're going to compete based on your unique selling proposition, which is, hey, we're at the ground. We're right here. You're going to call and you're going to get somebody in my office. We're not some big corporation, blah, blah, blah. So I couldn't agree with you more on that.
Yeah, like Louis Vuitton and Rolex and you know Mercedes-Benz can put up a billboard or buy ad space in a football stadium and just show the edge of the watch and maybe just flash the word Rolex on screen and nothing else. They can afford to do that because guess what? They're freaking Rolex.
Right.
Like you are, you know, precision painting in Iowa. And I'm sorry, you need to be a little more scrappy and put a CTA on everything. And yes, you need leads now. And that's why I kind of jokingly say when you work with like the brand guy who's like, well, it's really all about the emotional connection that your customer has with your brand. You you go, yeah, but I need leads tomorrow. So like, where's the part where they input their email? All I'm saying is like, I believe in brand, but I think that you can do it quite inexpensively. And going back to what I said earlier, like this Amazonification of buyers, the way consumers are consuming things and making purchasing decisions. I actually say this and I mean it. I don't think 5 years from now, the guys with the lopsided website with typos, no video, crappy images, I just don't think they're going to survive. No. I really don't. So
I agree.
You can do this inexpensively. Your business can afford it. If you are driving around going, man, my trucks kind of look like crap. I'm always embarrassed when people ask for my website because I know it kind of sucks. And my cousin did it 10 years ago. Like, fix the problem and you can do it so cheaply. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Hey, so look, I'm looking at the clock and we have just a couple minutes left. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about is AI.
Okay.
Are you seeing any cool stuff aside from like, well, we've got Rilla, who's a partner of ours. We've got, Rilla listens to sales calls and helps sales managers do essentially virtual ride along. So there's stuff like that out there. There's, of course, ChatGPT, but are there any other like cool things that you've seen out there that you use or that you see coming down the pike that maybe your clients are using?
So I'll give you a couple of thoughts. Like I'm certainly no AI expert, and I need to say that because everyone sort of claims to be, and I'm like the first one to be like. Oh, that's
interesting because I thought just because of your age and what you do.
Dude, I hate this stuff. I'm team human. I'm team human. If I could turn all of it off tomorrow, I would.
Oh, interesting.
Apparently we can't. It could cure cancer, but it's probably going to kill us all. It's like, I'll take the cancer. I'm good. So anyway, those are my views on it. Having said all that, I'm a business person and I lead a marketing team and there is like a certain interactivity that I have to have with this stuff to stay current and stay relevant. And what did I say 20 minutes ago? Deal with what is. You have to kind of let go of your notions of the way things ought to be. So here I am again on the AI thing. But if you have a very practical question, what is cool? I'm going to give people a really good LinkedIn follow. His name is Tersh, T-E-R-S-H Blissett on LinkedIn. He's a automations and kind of AI dude for trades and construction. And he's got tons of blog posts and articles on this for like very, very specific applications that he likes. The couple things that I think is really cool. We use Midjourney for AI generated images for a lot of, because we run a lot of ads. And ads require a lot of creatives and creatives require a lot of graphics and text. So we use a lot of AI. We use Midjourney specifically to make a lot of our ads. If you are a Breakthrough Academy follower or Contract Revolution listener, our targeting should be good enough to kind of follow you around the internet. And if you look at these ads closely, you'll see a lot of them are clearly AI generated because we can do them at scale. We can make like 12 variants way faster than a graphic designer could doing it manually. And then ultimately we kind of leave it up to the Facebook gods to test and see which one works. I think the exact same thing can function for a contractor that's doing like good digital marketing online. So Midjourney is really cool. There is kind of a steep learning curve to learn how to, it's not super intuitive the way that GPT is. We really like Midjourney. We use, there's a, the tools around, kind of like video editing and clip making are really powerful. So Descript is sort of this video editing tool that allows you to edit via text. So what it does is it basically records your voice and then it puts it into a transcript. And then instead of trying to like edit the video frame by frame, you just delete the words that you don't want. And then it basically reverse engineers the video based on how you edit the script. So it allows you to kind of compress things much faster. And then you can also go command H like search. Remember when I said XYZ, you can find clippable moments from your stuff much faster. So that's really cool. And there's another one called Opus Clip, which does, I think is doesn't function the same way, but it outputs the same thing in the sense that it allows you to find clips from long form content a lot faster. So I think that's really cool. And then the third one everyone's obviously used already is ChatGPT, but I don't think people know how to use it the right way, which I think that there's incredible utility for people. It's not so much, I really don't like AI generated text or content. I also read and write a lot, so I feel like I can see it very quickly. I'm probably a more discerning consumer than most. A lot of people use it for website copy. I don't think that's necessarily the cardinal sin or anything. But what I think people, the application I think people are sleeping on it for is writing SOPs in your business. Like, you can give it like a rough 5-point framework and say, hey, beef this up into a one pager. I think that's really cool, because it's not so much like I'm a brand and marketing guy. I think that brand voice thing is really important. I don't like the idea of having it AI generated, but if I'm just trying to make a simple production manageable for my roofing crew, I don't give a shit about the brand voice. I just want something made quickly. And so for like internal systems and internal like written applications, whether it's checklists or SOPs or protocols or whatever, I think it's really, really, and it's becoming like every version, it's even better. So the stuff that I've seen, the AI generated SOPs that I've seen, I'm kind of like, geez, this is really good.
Yeah.
I think that's a really cool way to use it.
I'm so impressed with ChatGPT. I actually, before we got on this episode, or we started recording, I actually went into ChatGPT. I've got an idea for something, and I'm going to ask it to give me the prompts that it needs to help me get it done. So I'm playing around with that. I've been playing around with it just to see if it'll actually tell me how to use it most effectively. And it should be interesting to see what it comes back with.
It's really good. Here's another one I got from Marcus Sheridan, who we love. He's a great author and speaker on all things marketing. And he's like, the way that he uses it is as a idea generator for social clips. So he's like, cause if you're like a pretty aggressive marketer for your business and you create content for your business, you know, it doesn't take long before you kind of go, man, I'm running out of ideas. Like, I did the video about how we cut in the lines, and I did the video about how our sales process is better, and I did the video. I'm like, what else do I do? He's like, you literally go in and you tell ChatGPT, like, I'm this business, these are my buyers, give me 50 video ideas. And it's unbelievable. So I think for that, I think like I still want to, there's something deeply creepy about AI generated video. It actually like, I'm not even, it keeps me up at night. So I'm always like, I want the humans in front of the camera. But if you want to get the ideas, because you're running out of ideas, it's great for that. And then it will say, hey, make a clip, a 30-second clip about XYZ. And you're like, why didn't I think of that? Hit record. You can make it. It's a really, I mean, you've heard this before, but it's a great brainstorming partner.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for being here. I appreciate you and all the good work that you guys do. Do you want to give a website? We'll put it in the show notes too, but where's the best place for people to find you?
www.btacademy.com. If this is coming out in the new year, you should check in January, February. We should have our new website up and live by then. I'm just putting the finishing touches on it now.
Nice.
It's going to be really nice. We are too. And I won't volunteer to build a website again. Man, is it ever a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, yeah. Luckily, I've got a buddy that owns an internet marketing company, and he's doing it for us, but we'll see.
It's still a lot of work.
Oh, it's so much work. We actually built a whole, like, we went into the CRM that we use actually has a website builder built into it. And we went in and we built out all of the pages, like with the content that we want to see it, not design so much, but all the content that we want to see and all of that. We gave that to them, and we'll see. But yeah, it's a ton of work. But okay, so btacademy.com.
btacademy.com, and then Contractor Evolution, just Contractor Evolution is the podcast, every platform on every Wednesday.
Every platform, every Wednesday. I like that. Benji, you're a good man. Appreciate
it. So are you, man. I love hanging out with you.
All right, everybody that's listening, Benji, hang out for a minute. But to everybody listening, thanks for being here. This is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.